Okay, thank you for the kind introduction. So this is joint work together with my advisors from my internship at Microsoft Research, Marcos Painado and Weidong Sui. And it's about high-resolution side channels for distrusted operating system. And it kind of fits the topic of the last talk, right? Because that's the same thing they are doing, but we are going to break it. So just a short recap. I mean, you heard the details before. You want to protect applications. Usually, you want to isolate them against each other. And the one who's doing that is the operating system. And the operating system is usually some commodity system that's large, that has a history, and that thus has a large code size. And usually, a large code size means also a high probability of bugs. And you have other attack surfaces. Once this operating system is compromised, the protection of the applications is too. So this gets even worse if you move to the cloud, if you have to think about other adversaries as was presented in the previous talk. So the solution to this problem is shielding systems, and shielding systems try to protect the application from the operating system or even the operator of the system. And they do that by removing the OS from the trusted computing base, as we just heard, either through a hypervisor-based approach, such as Overshadow or Inktec, or through an Intel SGX approach, as was just presented. And the usual approach to do that is to prevent the operating system from accessing the application, and do that through preventing the access, and at the same time also encrypting the memory so that other adversaries cannot gain data inside through physical access to the machine. So now the question is that we have this introduction and that we had in the previous talk, how well do these solutions actually protect our applications? Because we need to know that in order to really be sure that what we put onto the cloud is really secure and what countermeasures we may take if there are vulnerabilities. Now the simple answer is that it's not all perfect, and previous work of my two co-authors has already shown that there are vulnerabilities or that there are attack surfaces that are important for shielding systems and enclaves. The work was called controlled channel attacks, deterministic side channels for untrusted operating systems, and they exploited the fact that the operating system still manages the hardware and still manages paging, for example, which you need in order to run multiple applications. Multiple applications, if you run multiple applications, you have to take care of arbiting between them. And the operating system does that, for example, for memory, and thus it needs control over the page tables. So now you can exploit that control over the page tables if you look at some sample code. So this code that you see on the right of the slide basically is some simple function, and we want to find out what secret is, this Boolean value. The function runs on some page of code and memory, and as the operating system, we can revoke the access to that page from the application. Now, once this code is executed, we will see a page fault. In order to extract the secret afterwards, we now have to mark the pages 2 and 3 that you see on the slide also as revoked from the application, so basically as not present, and continue execution. The next page fault and the address where this page fault happened will tell us what the secret data was. Now, this is basically a de facto breakpoint into the application, and at the same time, it also reveals the memory access pattern of the application. The previous work used that to retrieve outlines of images and full text documents from a variety of applications. Now, the thing is that this is still not the best we can do. There are some limitations to the page fault channel. So, for example, the access is limited to page granular memory access pattern, because obviously, we can only see a page fault, and that's only the page number we can only gather the page number from the page fault information. Further, we require some effect that I call page toggling. It basically means that you have to switch between pages because you need to mark a page as active once it was accessed. The other thing is that this channel might actually be detectable. So it's currently our only means to set a breakpoint, and if this is detectable, that's a problem. So Intel actually upgraded their SGX specification, and in version 2, they give the application the information whether it was interrupted through a page fault. So a smart application would actually detect this, and if it did not expect a page fault to happen, it will stop processing the secret data and thus not reveal any secrets. So what we do in our work is we improve on this previous on these previous details. We increase the spatial resolution, meaning that we can detect memory access patterns much finer than the 4 kilobyte page granularity. We also improve on the temporal resolution. We can interrupt applications even if they just happen in one single code page, so no page toggling is required anymore. This significantly broadens the class of applications that are vulnerable to these side channels and makes it all the more important that your applications are protected against them. Also, this gives us an additional way to break into the application. So before I present the attack vectors that we use, let's just first have a small look at the system model that we use. So we assume that picture that I just showed, that there is some shielding system between the operating system and the application. And we always assume that this system actually works, so it's not fundamentally broken. So it really protects the application. I can't just touch the memory, can't just look into the memory. So it really protects the integrity of the application memory. What I also assume is that this commodity operating system is still the arbiter for multiple applications. You don't want to pull the whole operating system into your enclave, as that would increase the trusted computing base, as we just saw in the previous talk as well. So the commodity operating system is still responsible for managing your memory, so the same thing that caused the control channel to work. And it also manages scheduling and hardware configuration, also facts which we can use to exploit it. So now let's look at what our new attack tools are. So the first thing I want to present of our two new attack tools is the timer-based attack. The timer-based attack means that we can exploit the fact that the operating system has control over scheduling. In order to perform scheduling, it has to be able to program timers and thus interrupt execution in the enclave. Now, the challenge here is that the timers on the system are quite slow compared to the base clock rate of the CPU. So for the fastest timer we found on our system was the local APIC timer, which runs at 25 megahertz. This is a significant challenge to overcome, and we found a number of ways to actually make that work to effectively single step the application. For further details, I will have to refer you to the paper due to time constraints. We also need another way to find out the page fault address, because there's no page fault. We just have a timer interrupt, and this does not give us a fault address, because we don't need it as an operating system. So a shielding system would never reveal that, and normal systems also don't. But there is a way to still figure out the same information that we can get from the page fault channel, because the Intel systems provide you these access dirty bits, and they tell you whether a page was accessed. By clearing them once we detect an access, and then looking over the pages again that we expect to have been accessed, we can detect the same information that the page fault channel would give us. So let's look at a small example to illustrate how this works. The code that you see on the slide is basically a standard string name function. So there's nothing special about that. It gets passed a string, and the string and the code runs on one page, the string is on another. And what it does is that in the single loop, it processes the individual characters of the string until the null character is reached. Each time this processing is taking place, each character that is read, you get the accessed bit set on the data page. Now, if we program the timer correctly, you can see that the timer will hit after or during the memory access, which will yield us exactly the information what we need. So in the timer interrupt handler, we will test the accessed bits, and if we saw an access, we will increase the count that an attacker saw. So afterwards, we will have to clear these bits again, because we want to be able to read them again, flush the TLB, and possibly do some other things that slow down the application in order to make do with the slow timer that we have. For more details, again, I have to refer you to the paper. Now, this runs over and over again, and at the end of running our code, we will see that the attacker can see a count of 4, which basically means the string was 3 long, because we accessed the string 4 times, denied characters at the end. So we tested this if it actually works by running a string length function in an enclave and processing 1 million words with that string length function. And we found that 99.98% of all the words that we processed were detected, the string lengths were detected correctly. So we can effectively single step through this application. We do no longer need the page fault channel. And we can single step or analyze code that resides on a single page, which was previously not possible. Now let's look at another attack tool that we can use. So basically it's a cache side channel, and it's just an extension of a known attack called prime and probe. This is just a short recap on how that works. The traditional hash side channel assumes that you're an unprivileged attacker that shares some resources on the system, usually a cache, and that you with the victim application. And this attacker can indirectly observe the victim application through to gain its memory access pattern. Okay, so first, if you look at the cache, so this is some representation of cache, and this is no data of the attacker in memory. Now, the first thing that the attacker does is it accesses its buffer of data that it just has lying around. This is called a prime step. Once he did that, all of his buffer buffer data will be in the cache. Now, if the victim is running afterwards and accessing data, it will evict one of those cache lines of the attacker. Now, this is the nice part. If at this point in time the attacker probes this cache line, it will detect that the access to this cache line is slower, thus inferring that the victim actually accessed this very cache line. Now, that's the perfect case. Sadly, it doesn't work that nicely. Usually, your access patterns look like this. This is how the traditional cache side channel looks, totally noisy because you have other applications polluting the cache. There may be a million instructions executed. So it's not that easy. Now, luckily, we are not an unprivileged attacker. And this gives us a large number of possibilities to actually reduce the noise in the cache side channel. So we can control when an application is interrupted, for example, using our timer interrupt mechanism that I just introduced. We can also prevent other applications from being scheduled that access the same cache. So this gives, also we can disable prefetching, which enables us to avoid problems when probing our cache. Using all these tools together, we get access patterns that look more like this. You can still see that this is disturbed, but as a human, you can already recognize the patterns that are interesting to us, usually those light little points that are in the middle of the green. There's still some noise that we were not able to eliminate, but most of it we were. For the remaining noise, a simple classification filter already removed nearly all of the noise, giving us a picture like that. This is a single run of the application on a single data point. Each of the lines is one array access. There's never the same data access twice. So how can we use these tools that I just presented to you? We have two victim applications. The first is libjpg, arguably the image processing library. So this is the thing you go to decode images. The second application we look at is VC3. This is a cloud processing application that is intended to provide MapReduce in an untrusted cloud environment. So this application was developed from the ground up to be trusted, which makes it an interesting target. But first, let's get to the libjpg results. So I compare these results to the results from the control channels paper. This is a recap of those results. The left image is the original image that was sent through libjpg. The right one is the image recovered by the control channel page fault channel attack. This is the image that we recovered using our attack. Through the highly increased resolution that the cache side channel gives us, we have a high increase in resolution of the result picture and on color fidelity. The same is also true for other pictures that we also took from the same image set that was used for the control channels paper. Now, VC3 makes an interesting target. It is the only, or to the best of our knowledge, only and first shielding system that is specifically designed for Hadoop to be run in an enclave. So basically a MapReduce framework that can be run in an enclave. It protects the mapper and reducer applications so that they never expose data to the operating system or the operator of the system. It does that by only processing the data in an encrypted fashion outside of the enclaves and providing an abstraction layer that basically allows it to decrypt and encrypt the data once they leave and enter the enclave. This is a short overview of how that works. The takeaway is that in the green box, there's the decrypted data, but never outside. So how can we use this? Why is it interesting to attack VC3? It is really only the framework we are attacking. So we are not assuming any knowledge about the user-provided applications. So it's just like, basically, we attack the library you use. And every developer will use some libraries. Nobody will write his whole system from the ground up. The framework is very small, so it's only 13 code pages. So the page fault channel would not be usable here or not be as effective. And it does not know the application semantics. So it cannot process the data or does no large processing on the data. So can we still exploit this? The answer is yes. Because there's this nice property of MapReduce applications that tells that the framework has to group the intermediate values by key. This is the only time that processing is happening on the data, which is done by VC3. And it's the only time that processing is happening on decrypted data. We exploit this step by, because it is performed by a hash table, by indexing in a hash table. So this is the short attack outline. We attack word count, inverted index would be similarly usable. So we take a word that is processed by the application, and this application will hash it. So VC3 will hash this word. With this hash, it indexes into the hash table and inserts the key value pair. This is used for grouping. Now, this hashing function is very similar to the string length function. So using this exact timer attack that I presented in the beginning, we can infer the word length of the word that was put into the, that was processed through the framework. We can also use the cache side channel to find the possible hash candidates that for the word. Now that we have word lefts and hashes, what do we do with this information? This is the second phase, the text recovery phase. We have a sequence of pairs of lengths and hashes instead of the words. So each of those lengths and hash pairs represents a word. We use these pairs, or we use an English dictionary, and find the words that also have the same length and the same hash. Now this yields us a large list of words. We still have to do some post-processing on this, and this is basically done by looking at a very simple English language model. Basically, English language dictates that there are only certain words that can follow or precede a word. So we use a very rough language model and look at the words that follow and precede, and thus prune the list of possible word candidates. We do that until there's no more pruning done, so until there are no more words that can be removed. Then we order this candidate list. Then we order this candidate list by the occurrence frequency of the words in the English language. We assume that the higher the occurrence probability is, so the more often this word is used in English, the more likely it is the word that we are looking for. So this gives us a ranked word list. Now, this ranked word list we use to reconstruct the document. The first word is always in green in this case. So you can see this is the example from The Wizard of Oz. And we found that most of the words were actually perfectly detectable with the first word candidate that we found. So to conclude my talk, we have enhanced side channels. We have provided memory access detection that is at a significantly higher resolution than previous side channels. We have shown that fine granular breakpoints through timers are possible. And we have provided or demonstrated a low noise cache side channel with a single execution of the application over the same data. So we have presented these results for the libjpg and for the document extraction with VC3. And we want to say just that this is showing that it is very important to mitigate and to treat these side channels. The paper you just saw before me, it's basically a hash map, right? This is very susceptible to these kinds of attacks. So porting applications to SGX or developing applications for SGX, people should be aware that they are very susceptible to these side channels and use sufficient countermeasures for that. With that, I thank you for your attention and I'm ready for your questions.
Judges, hi, Sony University. So I'm just thinking about like what is the lesson learned here, and like does it sound like, because so here you mentioned mitigations, and it seems like what you mean is if you get, even if you try to change the hardware to get rid of some of the channels, there's actually even more side channels that we worry about. It's not just the page fault side channels. Now there's no complete way to get rid of those control flow side channels and memory access pattern side channels. And so does that mean that you should just focus on software, because the hardware, from the hardware, is really hard to prevent all these side channels?
So there is no way to get rid of all side channels, but that's true for hardware and for software. Of course, one of the solutions is to move control to trusted components. Now, if the trusted component is hardware, or if it's software, it doesn't really matter. So one suggestion I had is this trusted scheduler. So if you remove the scheduling control from your application, or from your distrusted operating system, either by moving it to a trusted hypervisor that just cares for scheduling and is minimal, or moving it into hardware maybe, doesn't matter. But you have to have certain components that you trust, and SGX does not provide that, for example, for scheduling. Mm-hmm.
I see. So does that mean, so, because we don't really know how much, like exactly how many other side channels out there, like does that mean like we should, it's just gonna be like a sort of like a arm race or a war is going on. I don't know. It's I would like to discuss offline, maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'd like to ask a question as well. So one technique that people use when doing things like checking passwords or doing cryptographic algorithms that they do in order to avoid leaking information about what paths they use or other things is they'll go and they'll perform multiple operations and do things. So to go back to your sort of string length example here, so suppose that you knew the size of the buffer that the string was in. And suppose that what you did is, as you iterated through, you walked the entire length of the buffer, and maybe for the operations after you've hit this the zero character, then you increment some like upper bits of it that you're not going to be using anymore. Would a mitigation like this be effective? Would this be something that would combat this? And I saw you nod, so I'm going to assume you're going to say yes. So, and then how generalizable is this to more general computation people might want to do?
I mean, this is classical blinding, what you usually do with side channels. You always have to find the right way to blind, so there's no automatic way that you can say, oh, I have to do that. The point here is not, oh, there are side channels, all is lost. The point is more that there are side channels. Take care of that. Take care of the blinding, for example. So just be aware that this is a problem.